talking about safety, I think, as everybody knows, last year we had a guy go over the side, and in past years there was a lot of fatalities, and we've had some recent fatalities, and I feel very thankful that we avoided one on my boat. My crew reacted as good as they could. It was a textbook rescue, and you know, you got to thank the Coast Guard. Years ago, we'd lose two or three boats a season. Now it's pretty few and far between. It still hurts when it happens, but they've prompted us to have a way better safety program, and they've really done a great job. I'm proud to know a bunch of those guys.
Before we talk more widely about that evolving safety culture, Bill, can you tell us more about that man overboard situation? What happened?
Well, it was, oddly enough, it happened during the, the supermoon, which the moon was as close to the Earth as it gets for like 150 years, and tides were horrific, and weather was good, guys were rested. It was just a strange occurrence where all the lines were very tight, and Spencer wasn't a very big guy, and he went to put the line in the block and subsequently pulled him over the side, and he was in for less than 90 seconds, and it was life-changing for me. As I said, I've been doing this since 78, never really had anybody in the water, and the training really paid off. I mean, it was second nature to the guys, and they executed it with total professionalism, and we saved this kid. I'm not sure I'd be here today if they didn't. I would have probably retired.
Well, it's great to hear that he was okay. That was, however, one incident, one event on one boat. So I wonder, Scott, if you can give us the bigger picture. You're following the safety situation for commercial fishermen across the state, so how did they do last season, and how did the crab fleet do specifically?
As far as crab fishermen, other than incidents like you just heard Bill describe, which had a happy ending, we didn't have any fatalities in the crab fleet. So obviously that's a good thing. You know, across the board in Alaska, I think we wound up with 9 or 10 fatalities. So, you know, coming off of our year in 2015 where we had zero fatalities, which, you know, I think was the first time in the history of people or fish, you know, that we didn't lose a commercial fisherman in the state of Alaska for an entire federal fiscal year. You know, 2016 and 17 were not that nice to us right on the heels of that. And there's nothing that really points to that. You know, people ask me, well, what happened or what was different? And I said, well, if I knew why we had a zero, then I would try to replicate that all the time. But having a fatality or 2 or 5 or 20 or 0 is just, unfortunately, there's just not a lot that you can point to. And we did experience quite a few casualties and fatalities in our smaller vessel fleet. You know, I'm talking set net skiffs, you know, some dive harvest fatalities. But by and large, you know, our larger vessel fleet and specifically the crab fleet has been, you know, extremely safe. I think between 1999 and 2017, I believe we had 14 fatalities. You know, that's not a good number. It's not what I consider an acceptable loss. But when you compare that to, I think, the 83 that we had in a 10 or 12 year period just prior to that, and of course, we all know that in that time period I'm talking, referring to, the destination being the most recent in a couple of years ago, which accounted for 6. Of the 14 lives, and unfortunately, when things happen to larger boats, then the potential for that kind of losses.
And before we talk more about the destination, Scott, thanks for taking us through that history and the general trends that point to increased safety. I want to ask Bill, what has that looked like from your side as a fisherman?
You know, I started in 78, 79, and we didn't even really look at life rafts on any kind of periodicity. And when that was implemented, everybody kind of balked a little bit. And I didn't. I thought, what a great concept. Because some of the rafts they pulled off some of these older boats, if you tried to inflate them, they wouldn't have inflated anyway. It was a different culture. It was a different mindset. Well, that's where the name came from, Deadliest Catch. We lost a lot of people in the 70s and 80s. It was just a set, ready, go. If you want, normally packed 150 pots, you put 180 on because there was so much money at stake. We started to get into, the Coast Guard started looking at the vessel stability, and they just really clamped down on what you were allowed to do. So basically, they pushed us to do what we should have done. And they continue to look, like you talk about trends. They look at where there's faults, they look at where there's a need for better regulation, and they step in and they do it. We've got a program now that they ensure when we leave the dock that they've done the best they can do to make sure we come back.
And why do you think crabbers have opened up and been willing to embrace more of a safety mindset? I mean, I know some regulations have changed, the fishery's been rationalized, and there's more training, more inspections. Is that all it takes to get people on board and become more safety conscious?
I don't know. I think the fleet as a whole has matured. In the old days, we all came up here and it was kind of the last frontier, and the shot at making tremendous money in a short period of time, we knew that we were taking risks to do it. And now that things have settled down, I think just people have gotten a little smarter, and we're not going to risk our lives to make the money anymore. And it's I think just everybody's matured a bit in the industry. Time's always changed. Everything's changing. But it's no longer the Wild West. It's, you know, between boats having internet and being able to live stream videos, and we used to have to send letters. And it wasn't very often we got them. You know, times have changed quite a bit.
And so that time and those changes have made crabbing a lot safer. But like Scott mentioned, the fleet did lose a boat in 2017, the Destination, and the six men who were on board. It was the fleet's deadliest accident in more than a decade, and I know it hit a lot of fishermen really hard. So how has it affected you, Bill, and how does it affect what you do out on the water?
None of us really know what happened to the Destination. It was a great boat. Jeff and his crew were great. You know, they're lifelong fishermen. It doesn't make any sense. I've always kept a sharp eye on my safety, and I've followed the rules and regs, and that's not the way I want to go. I mean, nature sometimes supersedes any kind of preparation you might make. So I've had the same program before the Destination that I do now. I just do the best I can to keep my guys safe and hope for the best.
I'll put the same question to you, Scott. How has the loss of the Destination affected your work in the safety program? Because I know you've come out and offered to weigh pots here on the island.
One of the things that we did find out through the Destination investigation was when they were able to retrieve some of the gear, bring it up and dry it out and weigh it, there seemed to be a little bit of a disparity between what the gear actually weighed and what the gear in, like, the stability instructions assumed, the assumed weight. And I think that, you know, when we were walking around last year and toting these big scales that I bought last year, and the guys were great about allowing us to, you know, in some cases they would unchain the stack and allow us to weigh some pots, and it was very well received. 100% of the boats, you know, cause it's not mandatory. I mean, it's just an initiative that we thought people would be interested in seeing if you know, if their gear weighs what they think it does or what the stability book does. And so we'll be out there again, you know, weighing pots and comparing that to the stability book. And I don't think anyone of the boats, I think we were on 42 boats last year in October in Dutch Harbor, and I don't think in any one instance there was anyone who was taking nearly the amount of pots that the stability book originally, you know, recommended that they carry. And so, you know, what we were finding, and even though the gear they were using, maybe it was a little newer and that would tend to be a little heavier because it hasn't rusted away, maybe the pots they were using were a little heavier than what the stability book said, but where we made up the difference there when we were checking is that they only had 113 of the pots and not 147. So that was one of the takeaways from the Destination.
That's interesting, especially after hearing you, Bill, talk about how often boats would overload on pots back in the day. How do you approach stability right now, and how current is the stability book on your vessel?
We have a very modern stability report that was done by a reputable company, and I'm allowed over 160 pots on my boat. I seldom take over 125. I don't know how you could put that many pots on that boat and maintain any visibility for transit. So I am always well within the realm of weight and pot distribution, the way it's stacked on the deck. I mean, I look at this stability report, and it was done by a reputable company in Seattle. And sometimes I shake my head, and I wonder what that vessel would be like with that many pots on. So I'm always within the parameters of safety with my boat. I make sure we can see. If there's any obstruction at all, if we have a few pots on the fourth level, I have two guys on watch at all times. It's everything that we do in safety is a guideline, but as an operator, you have to take it one step further and make sure that you're operating within the parameters that keep the guys alive.
And as we talk about these things, it seems like stability is a big one. But going into the season in just a few days, I guess, what are some other best practices that you guys would maybe want to shout out and remind folks of? Check your stability books. What else?
Well, you just have to have a good watch. You have to have people that roam the boat and look for things that aren't supposed to happen. You do test your alarms. So if you have water in spaces where you're not supposed to have water, if you have hatches that aren't secure, 90% of this is just having a captain and crew that pay attention, that keep an eye on all the details. We've got the training. You just have to implement it.
What about you, Scott? What else should crabbers be mindful of?
I think Bill kind of hit the nail on the head, and I don't think the little things can be overlooked, just the walking around and, you know, the checking alarms and what happens when this doesn't work, or, you know, doing a round of drills, just getting that in everyone's head real quick that, you know, hey, we're heading out, you know, if something's going to happen, this is when it's going to happen, and this is when you're going to have to deal with it. So recency in drills and training and talking about things, of course, you know, doing a quick check of your suits and your EPIRB, and is everything where you want it? And I think that's, you know, the best that you can do.
I think right now everybody is really focused on October 15th, naturally, and the start of the Red King crab. But I also don't want to gloss over the fact that fishermen will be out crabbing beyond this fall. They'll be out there into the winter, into January and February. So how do safety practices change over the course of a season? And without getting too far ahead of ourselves, what should everyone do and keep in mind as things do get colder?
Ice is the main factor. Ice can breach a hull. You know, my analogy with boats is people ask, how do they roll over? And I say that when you start to build ice on the top of the boat, the top half gets heavier than the bottom and they change places. So that ice is the main reason for me that the winter fisheries, you have to be a lot more cautious.
And Scott, I'll throw that to you if you have anything to add.
No, you know, that was going to be my answer. The water's already cold. You know, I don't want to be in 40-degree water anymore, and I want to be in 37-degree water. But the big dynamic in the winter that changes, I believe, especially for, you know, this fleet is the possibility of building ice. I mean, it's got to be the difference between October and January.
You have to get rid of the ice or get rid of the pots. You got to maintain the stability of the boat.
Well, thank you both very much, Bill and Scott, for joining me to talk safety and send out maybe a few reminders for all the fishermen who are getting ready right now. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
I just want to say thanks for all that you guys do, and I appreciate it, and I'm always happy to see a cutter or an aircraft near the vessel.
Yeah, same here, Bill. We appreciate the fleet's, you know, professionalism, and it's a pleasure going out and dealing with fishermen. I mean, you know, it was a hard sell getting on boats a long time ago, and yeah, maybe some of the regs have changed, but the bottom line is that, you know, one of the things about Alaska is we've always boasted about a 4 to 5% higher participation rate in the dockside exam program than other places in the country, and I think that points squarely to the fishermen, because they're the ones generally that are calling or asking us or stopping in the office. So heading out the door, I would just wish you all good luck and safe fishing.